This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise. More local entrepreneurs are going towards the social entrepreneurial model. The Social Enterprise Academy, founded in Scotland 14 years ago, aims to take ownership to fill the gap in supporting and training social enterprises in over 30 countries. Through practical and collaborative learning, the Social Enterprise Academy aims to help social entrepreneurs find new ways of meeting the challenges of delivering high social impact as well as financial sustainability, whatever their size, stage of development or area of work. Today we have with us Sam Bomba. Yes, I got that right. CEO of Social Enterprise Academy, who will share with us some insights into the only social entrepreneurial training hub in Malaysia. Is that correct?
Just about. Yep. Thanks, Frida. Great intro.
well, to start us off, and maybe tell us a little bit about the Social Enterprise Academy, how it got started. But I suppose you had a social enterprise of your own as well.
Exactly right. So I started off as a social entrepreneur probably about 20 years ago now, in my teens, starting to look at all the challenges the world has got and wanting to do something about them, but not wanting to just necessarily just use a charitable model to do that, wanted to use business skills. And that was just when that movement was starting to grow in Scotland. And so we were very fortunate at that time as social entrepreneurs in the communities that people who were running the ecosystem of support for people wanting to change the world started to recognize that the communities could support themselves using the skills of the social entrepreneurs to facilitate skills of other social entrepreneurs on the ground.
So what was your business?
At that time, Brendan and I, we started a social enterprise called Reunion, which was all about community assets in the middle of Edinburgh, where there was a canal that had been regenerated. Lots of regeneration money, lots of big capital spend, but the communities that were being sort of cut through the middle by the canal, they weren't really able to engage with that. So we looked at social investment models to make sure that boats could be put on that canal for community use, helping those people to reconnect with themselves and their community through a vehicle which was a community asset.
Is that still around?
Yeah, that's 14 years old now.
Right,
and,
okay.
It was, till recently, one of the biggest boat operators in Scotland because it had acquired another family business that was going out of business at a point of succession from father to son. As a social enterprise, wanting to keep the canal alive and that community engagement, we were able to step up, raise social investment, and acquire that private business and bring it into the social economy, if you like, to make sure that it was sustainable for the benefit of the community.
How did that lead to the academy?
Well, our involvement of the academy in the academy, as I said, the leadership of that ecosystem of support was really looking to find social entrepreneurs to facilitate learning for other social entrepreneurs and build that community resilience, not just to rely on business expertise from outside of the sector, whilst that's a very good thing. They recognize the need for that resilience from within as well. So we were, a couple of young upstarts. Still young, yes, going strong. And we had a background in outdoor education, community education, that kind of side of things. So we were able to facilitate learning pretty well. And so we were recruited to become some of the first facilitators for that learning. Social entrepreneurs have a very particular mindset, as I'm sure you know, where they're quite dogged. They're very focused on the purpose and the thing they want to solve, the big issue. They don't always have the necessary business skills and so on. And sometimes they rebel against an expert that's come in a suit to tell them how to do something. So actually, if you're alongside them and facilitating that learning and bringing in the knowledge from TED Talks and YouTube and guest speakers when appropriate, that can be much more powerful as an approach. So, so we were some of the first facilitators recruited at that time, and we have grown through those 15 years of the Academy's operation now.
And I guess maybe we'll talk a little bit about what is the social entrepreneurial model and how does that compare to your contemporary business model for I guess a lot of people who are not aware.
Yes. So all around the world, social enterprise as a movement is growing. In different contexts, it's being interpreted differently. But at its heart, what it really is saying, there are issues and problems and social issues, environmental issues that we need to tackle out there. We have a range of different ways we can do that. The typical NGO is struggling nowadays with grant-funded approach and small, time-limited projects and so on. And that blending in of business skills to solve the social challenges really is that the nexus of where social enterprise starts to come alive. If you're a business trying to change the world as well, that's fine, and we would call that maybe a social business or an ethical business. Where it starts to become under this label of social enterprise, you start to get A closer alignment of mission and the product you're trying to sell. Mm. There are other features to consider in different contexts. In Scotland, for example, we have a voluntary code of practice, which some subscribe to, some don't. But that starts to really focus on the issue of profit distribution or an asset lock for the shares in a company, for example. So the legislation in the UK is really quite advanced for creating those company structures that can enable a different way of doing business, a different way of understanding our profit motive and how we use profit. So it really is that blend of social issues with business skills at one level, but there are all manner of elements to the definition we could go into.
Right. What have I heard? Was that purpose with profit?
Exactly. Something like that is well done. That's why you're in communications, simply put.
You know, the other thing as well, and there is a lot of political will and with the banks and all that. I realize that there's a lot of funding or at least the loans available for this particular business model. And that's happened in the UK. You know, how has that helped in the growth of social enterprises, and what do you think can be done here in this part of the world?
Yes, well, so in contexts where there's plenty of funding and plenty of grants available, things like that, that can lead to an over-reliance on those grants or donations, where banks can start to offer loans, but be aware that social enterprise is harder than running a business because you're trying to tackle a social issue at the same time. So it's important that those loans are patient, perhaps. They take slightly longer to pay back or to a lower interest rate and so on. Or that there's a bit of innovation around how they get paid back or certain milestones maybe that are achieved. Those relationships between banks or investors and those social enterprises, understanding the complexities of that model are really important. And we've seen it really start to grow in the UK as a massive sector. Again, policy and legislation being quite enabling. We have, for example, a company structure called the Community Interest Company and social investment tax relief now in legislation that enables investors to be able to put money into social enterprises, receive good tax relief, and therefore they need less return from the social enterprise itself because the margins are going to be so slim in that type of venture. So that's really an excellent sort of policy framework to be operating in. So in Asia, in Africa, in contexts that we're working in with our global teams, the availability of capital, the availability of that resource is really tight. And the models enabling the investment of that money are, again, quite tricky. So the propositions don't necessarily exist to enable those loans to be approved, if you like. It's such marginal business often.
Right.
So I think the evolution of being able to have that recognition that it is going to be quite marginal, the sophistication of investors and people who are offering loans and so on, to understand that this is not where they're going to make a lot of their profit back. They can invest one part of their portfolio to make good profit. This bit will be the bit that has blended returns, social impact, and yes, recyclable money. The money should come back or something. But let's be pragmatic that it's not the bit where they're going to really profiteer from poverty, which is that's the problem around it, or often what the suspicion is that people are trying to do.
Right. Two magic words you said earlier, tax relief. That helps.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely.
You know, and I guess when people think about social enterprises, it is the popular ones will be with Tom's Shoes, like the people would know of, right?
Yeah.
And to me, the earliest form of a social enterprise that we know of, because there wasn't a term then, was Anita Roddick with the body shop when it first started out, right? And that was the thinking. I think that was the first time we all started thinking about, oh, wow, we can help people and, you know, buy great products at the same time, right?
Yes.
So what are some of the questions that are to be addressed when considering going towards this kind of business? I want to start a social enterprise. What are the questions I have to ask myself?
Yes. Well, so you raise an interesting example there of the body shop. So Anita Roddick, we would maybe frame that more as an ethical business because she was able to sell her shares in it at the end of it.
Yeah.
And that's one model of doing business, which is great. And that comes back to that understanding of what is it you're doing this for. So she had her own agenda to change the world, and she did very well at it. Yeah. Many other social enterprises form for different reasons. Some form to sustain a particular community in a certain place. And maybe what's important to them is that community gains empowerment through its own ownership of the organization, and that no one can sell their shares to benefit privately from sustaining this community. So the governance structures, the legal structures around how we set these things up are some of the very first and fundamental things that people need to think about. Mm. And often when people come on our programs, they get supported to really think through those issues. Mm. In Scotland, for example, repopulating the more rural highland areas of Scotland has been a 40-year mission over the last, 40, 50 years. And Highlands and Islands Enterprise has been quite an inspiring organisation supporting those communities. But those communities really having that self-reliance to do it for themselves, making sure the communities own development trusts or companies that operate on behalf of the community and turn their hand to a multitude of enterprising solutions, but not owned by necessarily one individual. That in their context, works really well. At the other end of the spectrum, you may have some very bright tech entrepreneurs who have figured out how to crack climate change with some tech solution. That's not necessarily a community-owned solution. So less important that the governance structure reflects anything thriving. Mm-hmm. But so understanding what we're talking about when we're talking about social enterprise, we could sit here and debate that for years, and some people do, and it maybe doesn't help necessarily. But what we tend to do is offer up lenses for people to look through so they can really ask themselves those tricky questions. Similarly around governance, who is it they want to be helping to support the sustainability of this operation? Mm. Have they got that right mix of business skills, community link to the domain of the product or the issue they're trying to challenge? Many people are operating on their own with two or three people and haven't got that the resilient board that can really help steer them through tricky times and make sure they're still around in 10 years and growing and sustainable. So many different issues, but that key word there I just was mentioning, sustainability. Often there's a lot of pressure to grow social enterprises, to grow them quickly, to hit milestones that maybe governments set or funders set. But the idea that we don't have to always be growing, that we can be sustaining a certain level of operation and sustaining it very well, mm-hmm. is one of those things that social enterprise is interested in. Mm-hmm. What is the appropriate size of that organization, and how do we make sure it's there providing great services, great public benefit for the long term.
Right. Okay, so the Social Enterprise Academy and what the programs you're offering, we'll discuss that in just a moment with Sam Abomba. You're listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise. Good morning. I'm Frida Liu. If you've just joined us, I'm speaking to Sam Bomba, CEO of Social Enterprise Academy, and they have an office here right in Malaysia as well. And you're currently in 10 countries?
That's correct. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Frida. All right. The Social Enterprise Academy has been really honoured over the last 5 years to have quite a lot of attention internationally. People have said, we like what you're doing. Can we replicate that here? So about 5 years ago, we started on that journey of replication and trying to figure out how do we do this on a global scale, and how do we make sure it's contextualized locally at the same time.
Right.
So that's been really exciting.
So in Malaysia, that would be 5 years?
No, in Malaysia, we first did some work in Malaysia about in 2015, working with MAGIC and the British Council, and really started to form some links there and to understand what could it look like here. Mm. And we went through our usual process of looking for a really good local partner. Mm. And it took us about 18 months, but we found NeoOne Associates, who are a fantastic team of learning development professionals already. Mm. So we really speak the same language. And they were, coincidentally, at the same time, looking for a part of their puzzle which would enable them to really work with the social enterprise agenda that they were so interested in and wanting to back up. Mm. We offered up our model to them as part of our social license development, which is what we've settled on now internationally as the model for how do we grow a global team that's really well owned in each location but collaborates with all the other countries. Mm. So we're really pleased with the guys that we have on the ground here in Malaysia. Mm. And just over this last year or so, we've really been starting to build up that first stage of growth in Malaysia. Right. So it's very early days, but we're getting going.
And what were some of the programs that are being offered at the moment?
So over the last 15 years, based on our work in Scotland, but also now in Australia and South Africa and other locations, we have a menu of kind of 25 baseline programs, but they are all able to be iterated and varied for each different group of people that come on the programs. If listeners are aware of that difference between learning and development and training, we don't really do competency-based training necessarily. We support other organizations that are doing that with more learning and development around leadership, entrepreneurship, but also social impact measurement and personal development. Mm. So those cross-cutting themes across any industry, private sector businesses will be, they'll have HR departments, or they'll be very aware of the benefit of that to their corporations and so on. But these social entrepreneurs in the community, they haven't got that. They simply can't afford it. Mm. So that's what we make sure is available for them. We find those that are able to buy on behalf of people that are trying to change the world but don't have enough money to have a talent development department. Mm. So leadership programs, the practice of leadership, the practice of entrepreneurship, those are two of the critical success factors identified in, certainly in business for eons. And in Scotland, about 2010, there was some research done into social enterprise and how to really grow it. And leadership consistently comes out top as one of those critical success factors. Mm.
How important is branding in the programs that you offer? Is that an important aspect as well?
Those learners that have come on programs around marketing and branding, then yes, we talk a lot about that. We can help them to work through some of their issues around marketing and branding. Mm-hmm. What we offer is that sort of, it's like a chocolate box. You can pick from it what you need at the time that you need it. Because often social entrepreneurs, just like entrepreneurs, don't know what they need to know until they need to know it.
Mm. So, you don't know what you don't know.
Exactly. You don't know what you don't know. And then suddenly you've got staff you have to manage. And then you've suddenly got to take a loan for the first time, or you've got to raise investment and get equity and have investors. And so we make sure that we have good contracts in place and good diversified income streams ourselves, running it as a social enterprise, to make sure we can put on responsive learning programs for groups of learners as and when they need it.
Does it tire some people? Because I just want to change the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely right. I wish the world would change faster. I know bad things seem to happen very, very quickly, and it takes a long time to make really good things happen, it seems. That's one of those challenges. And I think that's the other benefit we've had in Scotland, is the recognition that this stuff takes time. It's long haul. Absolutely. If we're going to have a more sustainable world to live in, we have to have more sustainable organisations, and therefore we have to sustain the support for those organisations year after year after year. And short-term 2 or 3 year major investment contracts are good. Mm. They enable that stability, and that's great. But the longer-term agenda, that knowing that to grow these enterprises is going to take 7 to 10 years to get to some sort of stability and profitability and so on. That's typical for many businesses, that sort of growth curve. We're not looking for the sort of the unicorn of businesses to come out for social enterprises. Some of them do get very well known, but most of them are small scale. Most of them are community level. Mm. Most of them are it's the zebra idea, isn't it? They're out there. It's those guys that need the backup consistently. They need the peer support networks to really keep resilient, keep going. And to really change the way that our communities are engaging with themselves and with the planet we're living on. So that's what I see around the world, is that we've gotten this change in orientation, inspiring the next generations as well to start thinking about how do I really run something for the benefit of my community, not just for myself, the benefit of the planet, and I want to do business in a different way.
Right. What's the zebra idea?
The zebra idea, that's a fairly new one. In all the talk of your Facebooks and your LinkedIn and so on and so forth, growing rapidly, that's your unicorn idea. The zebra idea is that we need these smaller scale operations. We need people who are motivated to be not going for growth all the time, but just sustaining really good organizations that are well run for the benefit of their community, the benefit of people around them, the planet, the people that are working in them are having a really good time, and that we don't always have to be motivated by high growth.
Okay. Why the zebra? I don't know.
I'll look it up.
But speaking of the next generation, in social enterprise education, you work with establishing these practices with universities and schools. This is like a really, really young age. Are you ever too young to start? What are some of the benefits of these programs with the younger generation?
Yeah, great question. Never too young to start, absolutely not. And when the Academy was founded, we were really working with adults. It was adult education. It was people that were already maybe come through university and were setting stuff up. And that is still core of what we do and we'll be doing in Malaysia alongside MAGIC and others. But we realized in 2007 that actually it's the next generation. You've suddenly got huge impact. If we can change that, the mental model with which people are approaching the idea of the world of work, that they're not just looking for a job, they could be an entrepreneur, they could set something up, and beyond that, they could do something of real social worth as well. And so, many of our programs in schools now, we've reached over half the schools in Scotland over the last few years. The ambition for the next few years is to be in all the schools in Scotland, a social enterprise in every school in Scotland, which is fantastic. And we've got the government are really wanting that systemic change. But over those years, we've tested and tried different models, and we have nursery schools doing some of this social enterprise in schools program. Primary schools, there's a great sweet spot there of young people who are really becoming critically aware. And it works just as well at secondary or college or university as well, supporting those different age groups. Once they get to university, though, it's more into the adult education style.
Okay, now, since starting Academy, there's some interesting results. You see 85% of social entrepreneurs improve the quality of their products and services, 94% enhance their performance, and 70% experience transformational learning through a profound shift in their beliefs after working with working with you guys, with the Social Enterprise Academy. Now, do you see what's happening in Malaysia? Are the issues the same?
Yes. So
the mindset, was it the same?
Yeah, around the world, I think. I've met entrepreneurs in South Africa, to Australia, to New Zealand, China, and so on. Everybody is similar, and everybody's different. That's our human condition, isn't it? And social entrepreneurs have a very similar set of issues, I think, wherever you find them. We're all doing it tough. It's all very, very tricky. These kind of learning programs, also, we've been learning over the last 5 years, does this work in all those different contexts? Does it work? And the finding is that, yes, the methodology does, where you can create good, safe learning environments. And by that, I mean that high-support learning environment that allows you to go to a high-challenge kind of situation where people are really raising the tricky dilemmas that are coming up for them. And this is one of those key differences for us, is we don't just do the training bit. You can rock into a training scenario. Trainer can stand and talk at you and get you to do exercises and engage with each other and so on. But if you attend to building the safety at the beginning and making sure that the people in that room can genuinely start to relate to each other, and if they do keep coming back and doing a slightly longer program, you can get them to a place where they are, from whatever culture, able to talk about what's really going on. The stuff that makes you wake up as an entrepreneur at 4 a.m. With a really tricky issue about something that's going on in the business, or you can't pay the salaries tomorrow, what do you do about that? And you've got a network of people that can actually talk to you about that and help share those tricky situations, or the real profound dilemmas that make you shift your entire sense of self-worth and self-belief and self-efficacy as well.
Right.
So that's some of the difference. But we're finding it works cross cultures.
Yeah. Right. Future plans for SEA?
Yeah. So, well, internationally, as you were saying, we have local teams now operating in 10 countries, all on that same journey of developing local social enterprise academy operation to make sure it's a good part of the local ecosystem, working alongside other players. Something that you said at the beginning of the show was that we were one of the only ones in Malaysia supporting that social entrepreneurial model. There are several other organizations offering really, really great stuff out there, and all off the route of some of the work that Magic's done in the past. So it's important in the growth of every ecosystem that you have that plurality of organizations. And we see ourselves as part of that mix, and that the local team here, led by Juara and Yasmin, play that part of offering in good learning development support alongside others that have incubators, thinking about Tandemic, for example, here in this context, others that are providing funding, others that are able to speak to government and do the policy or advocacy on behalf of the social enterprise movement. So in every situation around the world for us, it's important that our local partner plays a good leadership role in that ecosystem and makes sure that sustained support for social entrepreneurs is there on the ground. So I know the guys here, we've been testing and trying at the moment. For us, we're just at that stage of looking for good investment and backing and funding for small projects, larger projects that can make sure that that learning is available to entrepreneurs in the communities. So that's definitely something that's on our radar right now, and we're having some really interesting conversations about how we design that as a really robust financial structure in Malaysia to make sure that we're able to provide stuff for the future. The only other part is the schools piece as well. We're very, very interested in seeing if that's a bit of use in Malaysia schools, helping that socially entrepreneurial mindset, helping teachers to improve their skill set to let the young people free to test and try social enterprise models. We've got a good track record now in Australia with that rolling out, and a couple of our other countries are starting to test that too. So it'd be great in the next phase if we can be linking with the government, but also any corporations that want to back that as a major initiative to enable schools in Malaysia to test and try. But it's all iterative. We always test, adapt is part of the key to making sure it's locally contextual. We're really interested to see what Malaysia can share with the rest of our network as well. As we move to this next phase, we have new innovations in Pakistan, in India. I'm just back from a trip in New Zealand where there's some really exciting stuff going on. And the model of growth is not to impose our solutions that have already been done in America or the UK. There's some great stuff there, but it's just a start. And we want to see the innovation that happens locally in Malaysia's social enterprise context firing out into the rest of the world. So, that's what's coming.
Well, all the best with all the initiatives that you're doing. I've been speaking to Sam Bomber, for Chief Executive Officer of Social Enterprise Academy. You've been listening to Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.